It's on page 629 in the book that I have, chapter 12, text 15.
Text 12, 15, yeah.
Yasman.
Yasman.
No dvijate.
No dvijate.
Loko.
Loko.
Lokan.
Lokan.
No dvijate.
No dvijate.
Cha.
Cha.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Harsha.
Harsha.
Amarsha.
Amarsha.
Haya.
Haya.
Udvegar.
Udvegar.
Mukto.
Mukto.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Sa.
Sa.
Cha.
Cha.
Mei.
Mei.
Priyaha.
Priyaha.
Yasman no dvijate loko.
Yasman no dvijate loko.
Lokan no dvijate chayaha.
Lokan no dvijate chayaha.
Arsha marsha payod vegar.
Arsha marsha payod vegar.
Mukto yasacha me priyaha.
Mukto yasacha me priyaha.
Yasman no dvijate loko.
Yasman no dvijate loko.
Lokan no dvijate chayaha.
Lokan no dvijate chayaha.
Arsha marsha payod vegar.
Arsha marsha payod vegar.
Mukto yasacha me priyaha.
Mukto yasacha me priyaha.
Who else?
Yasman
no vijite
loko.
Yasman
no vijite loko.
Lokan no vijite chayaha.
Arsha marsha beo vegar.
Arsha marsha beo vegar.
Mukta yaha sacha me priyaha.
Mukta yaha sacha me priyaha. Yasman no vijate loko.
Lokan no vijate chaya.
Lokan no vijate chaya. Arsha marsha bayod vegar.
Mukta
yasa chame priya. Mukta yasa chame priya. Yasman no dvijate loko. Lokan no dvijate chayaha. Arsha marsha payod vegar. Mukta yasa chame priyaha. Yasmat.
Yasmat.
From whom?
From whom?
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Ud vijate.
Ud vijate.
Are agitated.
Are agitated.
Lokaha.
Lokaha.
People.
People.
Lokat.
Lokat.
From people.
From people.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Ud vijate.
Ud vijate.
Is disturbed.
Is disturbed.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Anyone who.
Anyone who.
Harsha.
Harsha.
From happiness.
From happiness.
Amarsha.
Amarsha.
Distress.
Distress.
Bhaya.
Bhaya.
Fear.
Fear.
Udvegaihi.
Udvegaihi.
And anxiety.
And anxiety.
Muktaha.
Muktaha.
Freed.
Freed.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Who.
Who.
Saha.
Saha.
Anyone.
Anyone.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
May.
May.
To me.
To me.
Priyaha.
Priyaha.
Very dear.
Very dear.
He by whom no one is put into difficulty and is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. Purport. A few of the devotee's qualifications are further being described. No one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. At the same time, if others try to put a devotee into anxiety, he is not disturbed. It is by the grace of the Lord that he's so practiced that he's not disturbed by any outward disturbance. Actually, because a devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional service, such material circumstances cannot move him. Generally, a materialistic person becomes very happy when there's something for his sense gratification and his body. But when he sees that others have something for their sense gratification and he hasn't, he is sorry and envious. When he's expecting some retaliation from an enemy, he's in a state of fear. And when he cannot successfully execute something, he becomes dejected. A devotee is always transcendental to all these disturbances. A devotee who is always transcendental to all these disturbances is very dear to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Om Agyana Timirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Pata Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrashatam Shahagana Raghunatham Vitamstam Sajivam Shadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitanscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Holi Priye Vansha Kolpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyayevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yasman no dvijate loko lokan no dvijate chayaha Before I forget, if we could do a cell phone check, if your cell phone is with you and not off, please get it off. In this 12th chapter, Arjuna began by asking Krishna, which is better, the person who engages in meditation on the impersonal feature of the Absolute, or the person engaged in devotional service? And Krishna at once answered that the devotee is superior. The impersonalist can also gradually make progress, but the personal path is the one that Krishna emphatically recommends. Then, after some discussion about the advantages of devotional service, Krishna has begun to describe the qualities of a devotee. Essentially to glorify the devotee by speaking of the devotee's good qualities. The devotees of the Lord are always engaged in glorifying Krishna, and they take pleasure in glorifying the Lord. And the Lord also takes pleasure in glorifying the good qualities of his devotees. So, in this, for the rest of the chapter, the Lord is going to be describing the admirable qualities that we find in a Krishna-conscious person. So here, yasman nodvijate loko, lokan nodvijate chaya. Udvijate means agitate. Sada sumud vigna. Sada sumud vigna. Dhya asatgrahat. The materialists are always in anxiety, Prahlad Maharaj says. They're always agitated. Samud vigna mana. Their minds are always samud vigna, completely agitated. Because asatgraha, they're grabbing onto something that doesn't, they're grasping for something that doesn't exist. Asatgraha means from grabbing something that doesn't exist, something that has no, that's not substantial. Like the fruit that you see in the water that you can't eat. The water in the mirage. The happiness in a dream. The materialistic person is trying to grasp that happiness. And he can't because it's not substantial. And therefore, samud vignana, his mind is always agitated. We hear similar words, udvijate. Krishna-conscious person doesn't agitate others. It's a feature of materialistic life that we sometimes take pleasure in giving, in agitating others. If we can make you mad, we're happy. We see this among children especially. One child teases the other child until the other child is beside himself or breaks into tears or what have you. And then the first child becomes very happy. His mission is successful. And we find this in the material world, that we take pleasure in minimizing others and in agitating others. Not always, of course, but this is there. If we can stick it in your eye, we're happy. So a Krishna-conscious person is never like that. He's not happy to see others in distress or in agitation. He is a well-wishing friend to all the other living beings. And he doesn't want to cause them anxiety or pain or distress. He never acts in such a way as to cause trouble for others. And yasman nodvijate loko and lokan nodvijate chaya. And no one can put him in anxiety. So often, there are threefold miseries described in Vedic knowledge. There are miseries caused by material nature itself, but it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too wet, it's too dry, it's hurricanes or tornadoes or so many kinds of natural disturbances, earthquakes. That's one kind of misery. And another misery is the misery that comes from the body and the mind. The body itself, every inch of it can give some sort of trouble. The skin, the eyes, the ears, the stomach, the lungs, the heart, then your tendons, your joints, everything can give trouble. It's such a great body that it can give trouble from any part. And if the body's not giving trouble, then the mind can give so much trouble. We're in all these things described, fear, distress, desire, unfulfilled desire for frustration, dejection, doubt. The mind can be, what is it? Can make a hell of heaven and a heaven of hell. So the mind can give so many miseries. The body can give so many miseries. So this is the second misery, body and mind. And the third kind of misery is those, the miseries caused by other living beings. Mosquitoes, snakes, rats, viruses, and worse than all of the rest of them put together, human beings. Right. Children, for example. Children, adults, any human being, sometimes vicious, absolutely vicious, taking machetes to one another, bombarding one another with deadly weapons, or sometimes just tormenting one another on the mental level. So the Krishna conscious person is not disturbed by the agitation created by others. He's fixed in Krishna consciousness. If you call me bad names, so what? If you criticize me, so what? If whatever. Even if you kill me, so what? Prabhupada gave the example of Socrates, who was, as you might remember, sentenced to death by the tribunal of Athens. And the way Prabhupada tells him, he was asked, well, how would you like to be buried? How would you like to be put in the grave? And the way Prabhupada related, he said, first, Socrates replied, first you catch me, then you grave me. First you catch me, then you put me in the grave. In other words, I'm not this body. And since I'm not this body, what are you going to do to me? You're not going to kill me because I'm not going to die. I'm eternal. So, you may cause trouble for yourselves, but you're not going to cause trouble for me by killing this body, which is going to die anyway. So, Prabhupada cited him as an example of dhīra. Dhīra means a sober person, a person who's not bewildered, a person who's not disturbed. Dhīras tatra namuhiti. A sober person is not bewildered by what goes on in the world around him, because he knows that this is the material energy working. And it ultimately has nothing to do with me, because I'm not part of the material energy. I don't belong to the material energy. I'm not ultimately affected by the material energy. I can't be cut, I can't be dried, I can't be blown away, I can't be drowned. Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dhati bhavakana china, kledhyanti apo, na shoshayati marita. There's no material thing that can affect me, because I'm spirit soul, I'm impervious to material things. There are weapons that are, use fire, there are weapons that use water, they have sound weapons these days, they have light weapons, there are so many different kinds of weapons. But none of the weapon, they haven't yet invented the weapon that can kill the soul, and they won't be able to invent such a weapon, because the soul has no beginning and the soul has no end. So the Krishna-conscious person is firmly fixed in his identity as soul. And because he's fixed in that identity, he's not carried away by the emotional forces that affect those who identify with the body. He's sober, he's grave, he's, at Prabhupada's words, undisturbed. He goes on thinking of Krishna. The example, perfect example, is Prahlad Maharaj, whose father tormented him in so many ways. And Prahlad just went on chanting Hare Krishna and thinking of Krishna and not even worrying about his father. His father was so powerful that the demigods would tremble when he would raise his eyebrow. And Prahlad Maharaj was going on chanting Hare Krishna, and he wasn't affected. His father says, what's the best thing that you've learned? He said, the best thing is that the one for a person who's too attached to this materialistic way of life, it's better to leave home and go to the forest. What's the best thing you've learned? I haven't learned anything from my teachers. They're all nonsense rubbish. The good thing I've learned is hearing and chanting about Vishnu. Those are fighting words. His father is totally inimical toward Vishnu. And little boys say, well, I haven't learned anything in school, but hearing and chanting about Vishnu, now that's good. So he was going on, speaking to his father so strongly. His father said, all the demigods are afraid of me. By whose power, by what power do you speak? So are you defying me? And Prahlad said, by whose power, by the source that you, where you get your power, I'm getting my power. It's ultimately all coming from Krishna. So, Namuyati, he wasn't bewildered, he wasn't intimidated. He remained fixed in Krishna consciousness. Very exalted example. How many of us could go on that way? But this is the nature of a pure devotee of the Lord, the ideal of a pure devotee of the Lord. In the eighth chapter, Stityasyam Antakale Pi. Let's see. Stityasyam Antakale Pi. Brahman Nirvana Mrityati, is that what it says? Let's see. Now we have to find where that verse is. Sorry, bear with me just a moment. I think that is the quotation.
The third one?
Yeah, where's that?
272.
272, of course. Not eight. 272. What's the beginning?
Asha Brahmi Siti.
Parta.
Nainam Pratyabhimaniti.
Mm-hmm. The self-realized person, even at the time of death, antakala means, literally it means at the end of time. So when death comes, your time is up. Time may go on for others, but your time is over. So antakala means at the time of death. Nainam prapya namuyati. He's not bewildered. He's fixed in Krishna consciousness. Stityasyam antakalipi brahmanirvanam rishti. Therefore he attains freedom from material existence. The time of death is, of course we have no experience that we can recall, but we can understand how, even what to speak of death, that just the onset of death puts people in fear. People are in anxiety that death may come. They're going to doctors, they're going to security companies. Please, you know, I shouldn't be attacked. America, we feel relatively safe, but there are countries where you dare not walk on the street without protection. People are keen to protect themselves because no one wants to die. If someone started chasing you down a dark street, you'd be in fear because we don't want to die. And what to speak of, you know, the onset of actual death itself, the process of dying at the end creates so much. Everything stops working, and different parts of the body are giving pain, and the mind is not working properly, and so much. But the sthityasyamata kale, if you're a Krishna conscious person, even amidst all of that, he remains fixed in thinking of Krishna. The materialist remains bewildered by his illusions. He doesn't know what to think of. He's thinking of his cat, he's thinking of his dog, he's thinking of his money, he's thinking of the girlfriend that he had when he was 17. There, one example, there was a plane crash and the black box was recovered, in which they could hear the final words of the pilot. And as the plane was diving out of control, the pilot cried out, "I love you, Mom!" And that, those were his final thoughts. He thought of his mother at the time of death. He could have thought of Krishna, but he thought of his mother. One of his mothers of millions of lifetimes. So maybe he took birth and got the opportunity to become someone else's mother. But we spend our lifetimes in bewilderment, and then at the time of death also we're bewildered. But Antakala, the person who's practiced, it takes practice. Prabhupada says not that our whole lifetime will think about everything else, and then at the time of death we'll miraculously remember Krishna. What we think of during our life will determine what we think of at the end. And the end is the time when everything is examined, when the final test comes. If we remember Krishna, we pass the test. If we think of Maya, then in the past fail standard, we fail. We have to come back another lifetime. Of course, whatever credit we've gathered in Krishna consciousness remains with us. But we have to come back and repeat the course, or continue. So the pure devotee is fixed in Krishna consciousness. He doesn't agitate others, and he's not disturbed by others. It's his ideal character. And he remains above these things. The materialist is absorbed in these things, getting even and tit for tat so many things. But the Krishna conscious person is above that. He's described elsewhere. Padma Patrami Vandasa. He's like the lotus flower, the lotus leaf that's floating on the water. It's not getting soaked and drenched and drowned. It's just floating around in time. The water goes up, it goes out, the water goes down, but it's just, that leaf is always just poised nicely on the surface of the water. The Krishna conscious person is like that. He's peaceful because he's always thinking of Krishna.
Harsha Marsha Payod Vegar Mukta.
Harsha Marsha means happiness and distress. We like the idea of being freed from distress. We may not be so receptive to the idea of being freed from happiness. It seems weird. Why would you want to be freed from happiness? But happiness and distress are flip sides of the same coin. If we grab or grasp onto material happiness, we just picked up material distress also, because they come conjointly. What today is causing me happiness may tomorrow cause me distress. Or what I will have to do to get the happiness becomes a cause of distress. Somehow the two will always be linked together. Even let's say there's no apparent link, that I got happiness and there was no distress, it was just happy. I didn't have to work for it, it just dropped in my lap and there were no consequences and it was great. And it lasted my whole life, it was so wonderful. But first of all, it will come to an end. And second of all, because of my attachment to it, I'm now rooted in the material world. That person or that possession or whatever it is was so wonderful that I want to come back and continue to enjoy this way. So the enjoyment even becomes my enemy. I think enjoyment is my friend. But enjoyment material things, that is enjoyment of illusion, becomes the cause for my continuing to live in illusion, not only in this life, but in the next also. So the Krishna conscious person is not carried away by happiness. He enjoys natural happiness. The happiness will come and he can insulate himself against it. But he's not attached to the material happiness. Yavichcha labha santushta. It comes, it doesn't come. It's superficial. My happiness is not because it's a beautiful day out. My happiness is because I'm engaged in the service of Krishna. That's how it went to. Thanks. So he's not carried away by happiness, intoxicated by happiness. I just won the New York Lottery. Mad with happiness. Not carried away by happiness and not carried off by distress. The distress part is, you don't have to elaborate, but everyone knows. Harsha, Marsha, and Bhaya and Udvega. Bhaya means fear. Great fear, small fears. What is it? Do I dare eat a peach? So much heavy little fear. Are my teeth yellow? And Udvega, therefore, anxiety. So the Krishna conscious person is free from all of these things. He's so nicely situated because his consciousness dwells in Krishna. Krishna's always living in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world which is free from anxiety. And the Krishna conscious person whose thoughts dwell in Krishna is also living in Vaikuntha. Even in this lifetime, he's living in Vaikuntha. That Vaikuntha atmosphere is invoked especially by the Sankirtan, by chanting Hare Krishna. One of the first things that we learned about chanting Hare Krishna is it frees you from all anxiety. One becomes happy by chanting Hare Krishna, but it's not this material happiness. It's not the happiness that's dependent on a material circumstance or material possession or material good health or material good economy or material anything. It's actually our constitutional happiness, the happiness that's inherent in the soul, the happiness that's natural to us when we're in our natural state. But that happiness is revived. Chaita dharpana marjana, when we cleanse the mind, that happiness is naturally revived. It's naturally revived. Freedom from anxiety is naturally revived. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement is so nice that one can purify the mind, one can be freed from anxieties, and especially one can become fixed in thinking of Krishna. One time Srila Prabhupada said, thinking means chanting, or chanting means thinking. That is to say, not that a Krishna conscious person doesn't think, that he becomes a robot, rather that he doesn't have to make a separate endeavor to think of Krishna. If he's chanting Hare Krishna, that is thinking of Krishna. When his mind is attached to the sound vibration, when his mind is focused on the sound vibration is Krishna. It's not that the sound represents Krishna. Krishna is one thing, the sound is another. The sound points to Krishna. The sound is Krishna. There's no difference. Bindatan, Namanam, identical. So when his mind is focused on Krishna, that's his thinking of Krishna is all automatically accomplished, as long as the mind is really focused there. And of course, by reading about Krishna, by talking about Krishna, there's so many things to think about in relationship to Krishna also. So to think of something impersonal, Krishna says, very difficult for us to focus the mind on something that has no form, no qualities, no activities, no. There's nothing there to fix on. But to think of Krishna, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his names, his devotees, his world, his queens, his gopis, his kingdoms, so many things to think of in relationship to Krishna. So the process is positive, the process is easy. Kirtaniya sadhana, to go on chanting Hare Krishna, go on thinking of Krishna. And then these good qualities will automatically develop. A materialist may sometimes show some of these good qualities, but they're superficial. Because he's not situated in his natural condition. He can develop some... my example, not Prabhupada's example, but you meet somebody and he's a perfect gentleman. He speaks nicely. He's considerate. He's clean, he's well-dressed, he's generous, and he's the head of the local mafia. So he has all sorts of nice qualities, but constitutionally, he's an outlaw. He's a dacoit. He's a lawbreaker. So we may sometimes find some good qualities in a person who's not Krishna conscious, but his basic principle of existence is forgetfulness of reality, forgetfulness of the Supreme, forgetfulness of Krishna, forgetfulness of who he is in relationship to Krishna. And so whatever good qualities we find there are superficial. Mano retena asatita tabhi. And they disappear at any moment. But the good qualities of a Krishna conscious person are manifest in relationship to reality, because the devotee is in service to the Supreme Reality, because he's in service to the personality of Godhead. All the good qualities associated with Krishna also develop in the person of the devotee, or manifest themselves in the person of the devotee. So the Krishna never glorifies the materialist for this or that quality. But he says that the devotee, the Krishna-conscious person who develops these good qualities is very dear to him. And if one becomes dear to Krishna, then one's life is successful. Stop here, see what kind of comments or questions there might be.
Earlier you were saying that a Krishna-conscious person is never mean to anybody,
mm-hmm.
like it doesn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I've been noticing, like, with some of my more material friends, it's like I don't get upset,
mm-hmm.
but them seeing me kind of in this situation, in this Krishna consciousness, is it bothers them so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can kind of see their fear, and it distresses them,
mm-hmm.
almost, because they care for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, what? I don't know. Like, it's just a strange...
Are you deliberately trying to put them in distress?
Not deliberately, I don't think.
Yeah,
I think so.
Sometimes a person who's very neophyte may do it deliberately. You know, well, if I become if I join the Hare Krishna movement, my mom will be so upset. Let me do it. You don't get dear to Krishna that way. But the Krishna conscious person is sympathetic, that understands that naturally they're they have friendly feelings toward me, they're affectionate toward me, they're maybe apprehensive about what's going to happen or what I'm doing. So he tries to help them understand things, to try to assuage their fears. But he's not going to say, well, I might as well give it up then. Not like that. In the war, a citizen volunteers for the army, and of course his mother is upset, his sister is upset, but he can't say, well, then let them take over the country, and, you know, my mother shouldn't be unhappy. He has a higher calling, a higher purpose, and he tries to pass it by, don't worry. So in that way, a Krishna conscious person is dedicating himself to the highest purpose, even though others may be upset or may not understand. He continues to stick to his purpose as far as possible. He pacifies them, but he doesn't give it up. Okay.
I guess it's the pacification.
Yes.
That's I'm finding difficult. Oh, sorry, I'm finding it difficult to pacify.
Yeah.
Well,
sometimes it doesn't happen in a day, you know. There's all this tumult and all this angst and distress and drama sometimes. And then after some time, you know, the next stage as well, looks like no amount of drama is going to dissuade him, no, the tears aren't going to work, and or we don't know what to make of it, but he's just going to do it. And then, all right, we're resigned to it. And then after some time, well, it's kind of got some good things to it. And after a while, well, you know, my son is doing this, and it's actually very good. And maybe after some time, maybe I should do this. My mother told me some weeks ago, she said, I was having trouble sleeping, and then so I tried your mantra. It worked. For that matter, she also visited Mayapur and Vrindavan and so many things. So, but in the beginning it was, oh my God, what is going on? And at the end, it's
In relation to Vaishnavas not being agitated and transcendental to material agitation, I've observed that sometimes in a Vaishnava environment where it's stressed that you know, one should have good association of devotees, one should interact with non-devotees but at arm's length, and also an environment that stresses certain points of Vaishnava etiquette, that at least from my vision, it seems that a lot of Vaishnavas seem to be more agitated than normal people at smaller things. For instance, like, you know, where I live down the road from a friend of mine is a mechanic, so I go down there and associate with him. Of course, there's dirt and chainsaws and constant tumult, and you know, people just go about it and it's no problem. But I've noticed that sometimes in a Vaishnava environment, you know, even a small clink or whatever, Vaishnavas can recoil.
Mm-hmm.
And how does one bridge that gap? Because from my vision, of course we all want serenity, but yet the Bhagavad Gita would seem to intimate that a transcendentalist should be not perturbed by small things, much mm-hmm. less large things like more catastrophic events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. Sometimes we see that the devotees seem more perturbed, more touchy than the non-devotees. And so how do we explain that? One is that they may be practicing devotees and may not be so advanced. I may be aspiring to be
undisturbed, aspiring to be, always thinking of Krishna, aspiring to be situated on the transcendental platform. But I may not be so good at it. I may still have material attachments. I may still have be influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance due to my past conditioning. I may still be in the hospital and not yet be fully recovered. And so you may still see the symptoms from my material life. I'm still angry, or I still get upset about this or that, or I still get edgy or nervous or what have you. That may still be from my conditioned life, because I'm in the cleansing process, but I'm not perfectly clean. That may be one consideration. Another consideration may have to do with what we're trying to do. The mechanic can go around with clanging and banging and everything going on, and he's undisturbed. If he were a poet, a writer, a musician, composer, he would probably find it more difficult to sit there in the garage with the chains and the smoke and the all that going on, because his work requires a certain amount of quiet and peace. So it's contextual also. You sort of have to compare apples with apples. The devotee mechanic and the non-devotee mechanic, and the devotee poet and the non-devotee poet. That's another consideration. Sometimes also a devotee may become agitated or something because of extreme dedication to Krishna. If you're particularly dedicated to a cause, then anything that might disturb that cause becomes of concern to you. If you don't give a damn about it, then you don't care. But when you've dedicated your life to something, and even the small things connected with that are of concern to you. That is to say that the devotee's not agitated for himself, but he's agitated about Krishna's interest. If somebody's going to take his money, well, okay, I lose some money. But if someone is going to act in a manner that threatens the welfare of the devotees, or threatens the welfare, the spreading of Krishna consciousness, then the same devotee who might be peaceful regarding his own welfare, his own interests, might become like fire for the service of Krishna. That's on the transcendental platform. Anxiety we find in the spiritual world even. We say it's the place of no anxiety, but there's spiritual anxiety for the service of Krishna. That's of a different quality, a different nature. Okay. Something else.
About there's a verse I think you might have been referring to indirectly about the Mahadguna, the qualities that.
Harada Bhaktasya Mahadguna.
Yeah, and I heard about another reading of that verse where you could read it as the how can they have the qualities of the great soul rather than how can they have great qualities?
Mm-hmm. Qualities of the great souls are the great qualities. Mahadguna.
But that would seem to indicate, though, that they might have some good qualities, just not to the extent of the great souls.
Yeah, the same thing, that they might have, like, what are the qualities of the great souls? Patience, tolerance, truthfulness, austerity, mercy, kindness, so many things are qualities of the great souls. You may find that in a soul who's not very great, but it's superficial. So therefore, the Bhagavatam says, what good qualities does he have? Just like Kamsa, he's kind of the typical example. He was so affectionate toward his younger sister that on the occasion of her marriage, he was driving her chariot to the home of the husband. This is, you know, Indian tradition, or Vedic tradition, that the girl now leaves her parental home and goes to the home of her husband. And the elder brother, someone in that capacity, out of affection, brings her to the new home. So Kamsa was very affectionately bringing his sister to her new home, and along the way he heard a voice from the sky saying, this sister's son is going to kill you. So at once he grabbed her by the hair and he's going to behead her, going to kill her.
Actually, that is my experience, that sometimes people, my material friends are more like fair weather friends.
Yeah, I know of one of my close associates. He has a sister, and everything was fine in the family until the parents died. And then it was cat and dog over the inheritance, you know, swindling and lawyering and deceit and all of that between brother and sister, you know, the same affection. Family. When it came to self-interest, it became the cats and dogs. Or at least she became, as I heard it, she became the cat. He just said, in my life, there's many such histories. Because it's based on body. Politics, for example. You know, we are allies with, name a country, because it's in our self-interest. We count them as a friendly country, and we have close relations with whatever country it is. Until our sense gratification is affected adversely, and then the alliances change, and we become friends with our enemies, enemies with our friends. Because it wasn't based on any permanent truth. It was based on temporary advantage. So that's material world for you, between countries, between families, between individuals. We're very sweet, very nice, very, until sense gratification goes the other way, and then it's a hatred guts.
So is the Krishna conscious view that that people are inherently evil?
Well, how does that follow?
Because, the idea that people are just acting self-interestedly.
That's in their disease condition. While we're infected by the three modes of material nature, infected by false ego, then we act like that. And Krishna consciousness means the pure position. We're freed from those things. Then the good qualities come out. Then that's why... that's why the good qualities come out. When we come to who we really are, then the good qualities are already there. And when we put aside who we really are, when we put aside our relationship, our existence as servants of Krishna, then we resume our false identity, and then whatever good qualities, they're just ephemeral. We want to have good qualities, true good qualities in the world. We need Krishna consciousness. Should we stop here? Yeah? Okay. Thank you all. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.